Arm's Length Reporting, for investors who want the whole story. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Time for Corlin Political Report featuring Jim McKinney and myself. We want to talk a little bit, not a little bit, but we're going to devote the entire weekend radio program here, obviously, to the war in the Middle East. I've got some very interesting thoughts on that. But before we give our thoughts, I think we really need to talk about what's going on. We've been here a number of days, though, and so far Israel is, if I'm not mistaken, Jim, pretty much massing on the border of Gaza to, as Netanyahu says, wipe out the terrorists. You want to add something to that, Jimmy?
Yeah, sure. So just, you know, for summary, and I guess most people have been paying attention to it, but on October 7th, which was actually, you know, 50 years to the day for the Yom Kippur War, which was a surprise attack by Arab nations that nearly overtook Israel, about 1,500 Hamas-trained commandos, terrorists straight up, crossed the Gaza Strip border into Israel, into numerous kibbutzes as well as a music festival, and attacked little villages and towns, kibbutzes along the border area within, you know, penetrated quite a few miles in. The damage has been estimated to, the some casualty reports are as high as 1,300 dead at this point. And of course, we've heard a lot of the horror stories of, you know, grandmothers, children being decapitated. We haven't seen the specific evidence, but apparently there are visual confirmation of that, in spite of Joe Biden's really failed comment on this. Basically, it's created circumstances that have inflamed the Israeli people, and where up until this event, there was a very large percentage of Israeli population that were actually looking towards peace, had sympathy for the Palestinian cause, had somewhat a bit of a negative opinion of the conservative government that had taken over by Benjamin Netanyahu. But what you've seen now with this massive attack and the absolute unbelievable attack is a unity government that's come out of that in Israel, where the former more moderate left leader Bernie Getz has now joined with Netanyahu to form a unity government, a war government, in order to basically annihilate the Hamas leadership in Gaza.
Now, my question is, I know that I've been watching this. I've been watching the news on, I've been following this on Fox. I tried to follow it on some of the other networks, but I think Fox, quite frankly, is doing the best job. This was talked about last night on Fox. I didn't hear it on any of the other in-depth, I guess I should say, Jim. I didn't hear it on any of the other networks that I kept checking in with. The concept of a unity government rallying to smash Hamas is very interesting to me, because I wonder how effective they're going to be. It seems to me that the best way, the only way to annihilate Hamas, basically, is to level their city. Comments?
Well, you can tell by pictures already. They're doing it. The Israeli Air Force has actually done a fairly decent job in doing that. I mean, large portions of Gaza City are now leveled. They are massing their, probably 2 to 3 divisions along the border at this point. They have called up the largest reserve call-up in Israel's history, with about 360,000 reservists being called up, every person in the reserves, including dual citizens and Israelis that are in the U.S. and other places around the world are being called back home and flying El Al back in. So they're preparing for a massive event, and they're preparing for it in a full-on war level. This is not going to be a short-term operation. This is a massive event, and it isn't directly or focused solely on Hamas. It's also on defending its northern territories near the West Bank and, of course, Golan Heights near Lebanese Hezbollah positions, which is a very powerful, strong army, and, of course, focused on Tehran and the Iranian support to Hamas. So this is actually spinning very deeply into a massive Middle Eastern war. There's a potential for incredible mistakes that could create potential for the Israelis to be in a situation where they become very desperate. And the reason why I say that is Hamas did not take this action without the understanding that they had a serious backup capability somewhere. They just weren't big enough and strong enough to do this type of damage. So there must be a bigger strategic reason for Hamas to take this extreme action, and with the devastating consequences of, you know, citizens and civilians and young peace people at a rave festival being hunted down, shot in the street, grandparents shot in the street, and then taking a large number of kidnapped people. So it looks like at least over 100 hostages have been held in Gaza, possibly deep in tunnels. We are not exactly sure where they are. But there was a sophisticated plan, and there was an expectation that they had support in a broader area, or they would not have conducted it, which actually brings the possibility of a three-front war for Israel, and their ability to sustain that war would require massive assistance from the United States and other powers, and we don't know if they're capable of doing that considering the commitments to the Ukraine war right now and the damage to U.S. stockpiles from supporting that war for over a year and a half.
Well, that's absolutely true. I also, later on in the show, want to talk about the organization called the United States of America and how efficient an organization it actually is today. To me, that's a pretty fascinating question, Jim, in watching some of the TV coverage of the involvement you know, of the federal government. It's pretty pretty weak, in my opinion, in some aspects. But can Israel alone fight a three-front war? Number one, the area of Gaza that you just discussed, the area of Gaza between Gaza City and the ocean, and of course another front involving Israel itself. I don't know, that could be pretty tough, Jim. I think it depends on something else that we're going to talk about later in the show, and that's called the involvement of Iran.
Al, I do want to address, we've only got about a minute left here, that you know, I was in Berlin as in 5th 502nd Parachute Infantry Regiment at the fall, you know, we transitioned at the end of the Russian and Eastern European collapse, the Soviet collapse. And I've trained in urban warfare. Urban warfare is incredibly challenging.
Right.
And the potential casualties are significant on all sides. So this is going to be no easy walk, no easy piece of cake for the Israeli military, and there's a potential for them to being bogged down because of the intensity if they go forward with this. And it, obviously significant losses on all sides.
Right.
So that would potentially, over time, give justification for Iranian, Hezbollah, Syrian intervention in support of the Palestinians. And, of course, the Europeans are always a wild card on their support. So this is a very dangerous situation right now, and I think we'll go ahead and move on to the next segment here.
Okay, you guys, we also have to take a commercial break, so stick around. Jim and I are going to be right back.
Thank you. your weekly fix on finance and investing. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Welcome back to the Corlin Political Report featuring Jim McKinney. And, of course, Al Corlin is taking part. This segment, we're going to talk a little bit about the right that I would have to say Hamas had at this particular time in attacking Israel. A lot of people in the United States, primarily college students, feel that Hamas had every right in the world in attacking Israel, and Israel had no right whatsoever in this particular situation to fight back, to defend themselves. Seems a little strange to me, Jimmy. What do you think?
Yeah, I think what we've seen with this attack is actually a return to 2,000 years ago when people in the region would kill and destroy people and everyone in villages in order to achieve their goals and intimidate. There are a number of protesters in many areas, and one of the most recognizable is, you know, different letters that were written at Harvard University. Some of it is students, but actually a lot of it is orchestrated through different agencies and nonprofits that support the Palestinian cause.
Right.
And the Palestinian cause, you know, that since the formation of Israel and the civil war that happened because of that, you know, actual, you know, the British Empire kind of divvying it up post-war, and this constant fight with the Palestinians and the Arabs in the region. A lot of people do have sympathy because the Palestinians have not had the space that they once had. And although you've got to understand that, you know, Israel does employ a massive number of Palestinians. They have given them the option to actually be a part of the country. But there has been this hatred and animosity because of that civil war and that demarcation. And the actual want and desire, and the publicly stated desire by the Hamas leadership, by the Iranian leadership, to eradicate Israel and Jews from the face of the planet, and certainly from the Holy Land. So that lingering animosity's been going for a long period of time between both sides, and the atrocities, you know, have been painful everywhere. But nothing has compared in history, recent history, to what happened in this event, and the calculus, the strategy had to be in their mind either complete loss of, you know, control, which is possible, but it actually was a very well coordinated and orchestrated event, because you can tell by looking, and I've watched numerous clips from, and some of it's been posted by Hamas fighters themselves, where you had very sophisticated commando groups attack the Israeli barracks and some of the kibbutzes that are more organized and controlled. And then you had civilian dressed, more random people attacking the festival and the less defended areas. So there was a lot of intelligence on what the different targets were, and then who would take part in which of the targets. They moved in with paragliders. They moved in with rapid moving trucks. They breached defensive barriers and walls and rapidly moved to their targets. So they were very effective, the 1,500 or so, apparently, Hamas commandos that went in. And then, of course, the devastating response from the Israeli government now is only going to create more animosity with the remaining Palestinian people inside Gaza, of course. But at the same time, you know, the Israelis are just said enough is enough. So this is a very complex, a very problematic situation. And of course, the U.S. policy is disastrous, but you've got these pressure points all around the world from organized voices that are trying to support the Palestinian cause, including some of the major media outlets. And they're having a very difficult time because of the level of atrocities that the Hamas fighters executed on these individual civilians and, of course, the hostages. So it's a tough moment in history and a really tough moment for all sides involved. But I think the outcome here is going to just – it could even get even worse.
Well, you know what I find to be interesting is when you look at Hamas And then you look at Israel, which I always looked at Israel as being, Jimmy, a very strong world power. And they're not exactly walking over Hamas right now. Now, very possibly, and we'll talk about this in a later segment, because I'm sure you have some ideas on this, but very possibly Hamas in this particular event is being supported by Iran. And if that's the case, which I think it probably is, all the opinions I'm seeing on the various news channels give pretty conclusive evidence that Iran is in there showing Hamas, telling Hamas as exactly how to handle themselves in this case.
Agreed? Well, here's the unfortunate reality. Militarily, the Iranians are absolutely funding, equipping, training the Hamas fighters.
Right.
And, you know, Hamas does not, you know, the Gaza Strip does not have a manufacturing capacity to put out thousands and thousands of rockets. They
right.
don't have sophisticated, what even Western armaments. So you're seeing a tremendous inflow and a preparation in this fight that was really interesting because it's sending unguided rockets that are taking out ammunition for the Iron Dome of defenses and actually depleting Iranian ammunition very rapidly. That's going to be problematic over time.
Right.
But the Iranians have clearly armed them. But here's the other half of the problem, Al. The United States and the Biden administration had restarted funding that the Trump administration had stopped to Hamas because they were a terrorist group. Biden administration restarted that, has given them over $1 billion in aid and assistance. When you give them assistance for food and other, you know, medical supplies, all those types of humanitarian issues, that means they use their resources, the rest of their own resources, from something else. The same thing with the European Union. There's been a tremendous inflow of resources to support Hamas and the Gaza Strip in humanitarian sense, which allows the more radical arms to use their what remaining resources they have and maybe even divert resources into arms and weapons. That is a problem that has to be stopped if you want peace between Gaza and Israel. And what you're seeing now with this blockade and complete surrounding that and this attempt by Israeli forces, it looks like they'll be moving into the ground war very rapidly, to actually clean out all that capacity, which will likely mean some sort of an occupation over time again, which has not been successful in the past. It's, again, a very problematic set of circumstances.
So we have a very problematic system of circumstances here. Jimmy, this is right up your alley. You really are the expert in the event and an expert in predicting the outcome of events similar to this. Ladies and gentlemen, got to take a break for the top of the hour news. Be right back.
To find out more about today's guests, visit us on the web at www.kereport.com. You're listening to the Corlin Economics Report. We'll be back in a moment. Providing unique reporting on markets and companies since 1990. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Welcome back to Corlin Economics, featuring Jim McKinney. In this segment, we're going to talk about perhaps the complicated puzzle that is being formed by other nations that may be involved, unbeknownst to America, in the Gaza war. Jimmy,
yeah, well,
go ahead, Jim. What do you think?
Well, I think there's a tremendous number of people that are involved in this that are actually making statements or behind the scenes communicating and discussing both with Israel, with Hamas, and of course, Iran and other people in the region. So there was a report I think on Sunday, right after the initial assaults, from Neil Cavuto's show with Michael McCaul, Republican leader on the House Foreign Affairs Committee, saying that Egypt had warned Israel. And of course, Israel has denied that vehemently, and Egypt came out and denied that vehemently. Now, we don't know the detail of what warning there was, if there was a little bit of a warning, or to what scope or scale there was. But Egypt is having to be very careful not to inflame their population in support of the Palestinians, so they're being careful in stepping it back. Erdogan, the president in Turkey, has taken a very strong stance, and actually one of his ministers actually threatened Netanyahu with it, said he would be murdered. He's been attempting to talk to the Hezbollah, to Hamas, to get them to do hostage negotiations. And apparently there are some efforts. And of course, Anthony Blinken, the Secretary of State, U.S. Secretary of State, has said that they're working towards hostage negotiations. Now, we know that Iran has been funding terrorism in the region. They are the grand funder of terrorism throughout the world. That's a clear fact. You can't really deny that, as much as some people want to divert away from it. But the Biden administration provided the Iranian government, released funds that had been frozen, $6 billion in exchange for 5 Iranian Americans being held hostage by the Iranian government. So if you're a regional terrorist or you're a regional political power, and you see that the U.S. is willing to cough up $6 billion for 5 people, why wouldn't you be excited about taking 100 plus hostages in order to use them in negotiations to achieve your goals? So this becomes complex and very problematic, because we've set a precedent of negotiating with terrorists. And that's not the only money we've sent to Iran. The Obama administration, in order to get through the JCPOA, the Iran nuclear deal, if you will, back now approaching 10 years ago, they gave the Iranians over $100 billion, a lot of it in cash. They had to fly it in aircraft to transfer that over to them. Money that had been held up for years because of sanctions and the hostages situation back in 1979, 1980 under the Carter regime. So this set of policies that had kept Iran somewhat isolated over time was broken under the Obama administration, reestablished under the Trump administration, and then it completely turned around with the same leadership that had been in the Obama administration that now sit in the Biden administration. And what you see is a complete failure of public policy and national security policy in allowing this negotiation, of allowing these funds to go forward to a country and a leadership that is really intent on gaining power in the region and pushing the United States out. And those are, clear objectives that they stated on multiple occasions.
And you're talking about Iran right now.
And the Iranians immediately came out praising the attacks. Of course, we know that they've trained him, that we know that equipped him. There's no other capacity or any country that would be able to provide the type of support in the region, or that would want to provide the support in the region. But there are a lot of crooked arms dealers, and there are a lot of Iranian political objectives, and Hamas has been a subservient ally to them. And you've got to think of this as in a much broader strategic power play to isolate Israel, and possibly, and this is one speculation theory that I have, that as Israel had been building better relations with Arab nations, including the 4 nations that signed onto the Abraham Accords under the Trump administration, and they were getting close, and it's been announced in the last few weeks, getting close to actually formalizing the relationship with the Saudi government.
Right.
This type of action and such extreme attacks on the civilian population by Hamas will create a very powerful reaction. And I think the Iranians are using Hamas to do that in order to separate Israel from Arab nations once again, because they'll be inflamed at the atrocity, the power that Israeli goes after Hamas. So it is a complicated strategic gamble on all sides, but it is much deeper than what most people think. And I think there are a lot of power plays going on in the world over this.
Yeah, of course there are. What I want to bring up here is that a lot of countries around the world have structured, for lack of better terms, peace treaties between the Israelis and other countries. Don't forget, Xi Jinping was very active in doing that after Donald Trump's son-in-law started that particular train down the track, also being very successful. And Xi Jinping, I have to say, was incredibly successful in accomplishing this. Where is this going to take the Middle East in the future? My guess would be countries like China and perhaps other strong countries will now have more of a role to play in the direction, Jim, of the Middle Eastern countries.
Well, there's certainly a fight going on right now for power. And remember, Iran and China are very closely tied because of oil sales and energy requirements that the
right.
Chinese need to continue their manufacturing kind of dominance. And the Russians are dependent upon Iran for equipment. They've been getting Shahed drones. They've been getting a large number of weapons from Iranians. So that actually is a very interesting dynamic, complex dynamic that's going on. And of course, with the Ukraine-Russia conflict right now, the United States has been funding Ukraine, pouring all our ammunition into them.
Right.
The Israel depends on the United States as a primary security partner to guarantee their logistics sustainment over a long period of time. We're running out of ammunition. We're not going to be able to sustain support to Ukraine and Israel and maintain defenses on our own for our own positions. And then the possibility for another player to step in and cause catastrophes, say maybe a movement by China on Taiwan, has become much more highly probable, because the United States has shown a tremendous amount of weakness and poor policy planning across the board, starting from the disastrous evacuation from Afghanistan, the failure to keep the Russians from actually initiating the invasion into Ukraine. And of course, the Middle East now is a disaster because of the support the Biden administration reestablished to Hamas and the regional players in Iran. So, and by the way, over the next year, these people in the Biden administration aren't getting any smarter, and Joe Biden is not getting more competent. So we are in a very difficult situation going forward.
And we're going to discuss this very difficult situation more in the summary of the program. I think it's almost a major understatement on Jim's part. I think the problem is huge for the United States now. Stick around. We're going to be right back and describe that. Here to wrap up Corlin Economics featuring Jim McKinney. We want to talk in this final segment about the national disaster that America could be in a matter of just a few short days as a result of the southern border. Jimmy, why don't you start?
Well, yeah, I think, we want to put in context the problem in Israel and what happened in this attack. So, people are talking about a Pearl Harbor or a comparison of 9/11 in the United States. But the United States has 330 million people plus whatever illegal immigrants that have come in. About 7 million is estimated since the Biden administration came to power. So what happened in Israel, if you actually do kind of a ratio for population, that's actually, the impact would be not just 1,000 or 1,300 people that are killed, but for the United States, an equivalent proportional attack would be about 30 to 35,000 people killed in a terrorist attack. So when you start talking about 7 million illegals crossing the border in the United States. And of those 7 million, we know from the Border Patrol that has caught them that over 100,000 military age Chinese males from mainland China have come across the border. And we know, based on Border Patrol statistics and Homeland Security statistics, that over 50,000 people from Arab countries or Islamic countries that have no, we have no relationship to vet them, have come across our border illegally. And we have no idea how many more others have come across and were not engaged by the Border Patrol. And of that 7 million that have crossed the border, 99% of them have been released and are out floating around in the U.S. So let's just take 1% of 7 million, 70,000 people, that would cheer the destruction of the United States. Let's take 1% of the 7 million, of the 70,000 that would actually be willing to conduct attacks on the United States and possibly infiltrating the United States. We're still talking about 700 potential violent terrorists that may have come across our border because of the Biden policies. How much damage could 700 people do? Well, we saw the damage that happened in schools here and towns and villages in Israel.
Right.
That could be incredibly damaging. So when the Democrats say they've got a secure southern border, they're flat out lying, and we don't know where these people are. So the potential ramifications here in a coordinated attack on Israel may include the possibilities of infiltrators into the United States through the southern border, which could cause catastrophic damage and bog us down in a very, very difficult situation by just going out and randomly shooting in malls or schools or, you know, hitting, you know, law enforcement targets if there's a coordinated attack out there. And we know that this was very well orchestrated, this attack, and we know the world is in a very difficult situation. And I am very concerned that our administration, the Homeland Security, have actually set us up for failure. Even one attack, remember, it was only 19 hijackers that took those four planes and crashed them.
Right.
Into targets in the United States.
Now, Jimmy, yeah, that's terrifying. Now, what you are saying actually is that the parallels between what Hamas is doing in the Middle East right now, to an extent, could be the harbinger of what other terrorist groups could do in the United States if they had the desire to do that. And you are using the ineffectiveness of our southern border as a reason that could happen, correct?
Absolutely. I think, and it's imperative for people to understand, you know, I was a member of the Joint Terrorism Task Force while I was, you know, which is a interagency effort in one state in the United States while I was Deputy Chief of Combating Terrorism for all U.S. Pacific Command.
Right.
Back, you know, 15 years ago, 14 years ago. And I will just tell you this, Al, that people have no idea how many people are out there that are connected to these types of organizations. And you see when protesters step up in Harvard immediately or in Chicago within hours with pre-printed posters supporting Hamas and supporting the Palestinians and actually ignoring the atrocities, this absolutely uncivil, absolutely terrible atrocities, ignoring that, you see there's an orchestrated and organized, coordinated media effort and a coordinated communications effort to get people on board with the same issues. We saw that in the Antifa riots and the BLM riots in 2020. So how hard is it to say and to think that, oh, wow, a handful of terrorist attacks that would happen in the United States would create the same type of catastrophe? But my biggest fear is that as the Biden administration falters, and Joe Biden is faltering badly, it's embarrassing when he actually comes up to speak. It's embarrassing how bad both Department of Defense as well as the State Department and the National Security Advisor, Jake Sullivan, have failed in their public diplomacy efforts around the world. It's absolutely disgusting. So what do tyrannical governments turn to in order to control the population? Creating more wars. And you know what? If you have a few terrorist attacks in the United States, how quickly would they clamp down as hard, if not harder, than they did over COVID? And that's the type of thing, you know, under the guise of we're trying to make you secure. They've set the situation up to be catastrophic. If, in fact, something happens, they're going to respond in order to protect themselves. And they will do that at taking away individual choice and freedom, individual rights in the United States.
Yep.
And that's what I fear more than anything else.
Yep. And what I want to suggest to listeners is just work out the natural progression of what Jimmy is talking about right now. For a terrorist group to come into the United States, I think is very, very possible. Let's look at how Hamas, a well-organized but somewhat fractured group of guys who don't even have their own country, look what they're doing to a world power right now, like Israel. It's embarrassing.
Well, I will tell you that Hezbollah, which is another surrogate for the Iranian regime, is very sophisticated, very well trained, and have sleeper cells all around the world. And that's fact. There's plenty of information out there to do it. But I can tell you, they have incredibly well orchestrated training and intelligence operations around the world, and they could activate at any time. And again, when any country gets desperate for survival, they're going to take actions, extreme actions. And of course, what we're seeing now is a precipice, you know, just the beginning, the edge of the cliff of potential catastrophe between Arab nations, Israel, the United States, and of course China, Russia, and all the other players in the region. And I'm honestly, Al, for the first time in my life, I've actually seen the potential for Armageddon. You know, this is
right,
because it's really uncontrolled, and there's no adult leadership out there. The United States has been, in the last 20 years, kind of played that role as adult leadership. We've failed at it miserably, unfortunately, because of this latest election incompetence, and I don't know how we're going to get it back.
Well, I don't either, but I'm sure it will come back. The pendulum always swings both ways, Jim. I think right now we are in the midst of a crisis with our government, and I would like to talk about that in a daily editorial that we will post on Friday. We do have a crisis right now in the United States that is emanating from, for example, the speaker, the situation.
Well, let's hold off on the politics for that. I want to follow up just as we close up right here for a minute. Henry Kissinger has finally woken up and said, you know what, it was a grave mistake for the Germans to let so many foreigners into the country.
Yeah.
That's the problem we're facing in America right now.
Exactly.
And the whole world is because of this.
Okay, I agree 1,000%. You guys, you've been listening to Corlin Economics featuring Jim McKinney, giving you some really good ideas in this program. Don't mean to be fear-mongers, just being realistic. See ya next week.
The Corlin Economics Report is produced for A.B. Corlin and Associates. Opinions expressed on this program are intended solely for the entertainment of our listeners, do not constitute investment advice, and are not necessarily those of this network, radio station, or our sponsors. Find out more about this program and today's guests by visiting www.kereport.com. For Al Corlin, this is Colleen Robbins. Join us again next week for the Corlin Economics Report.